Right, let me confirm. Jed, are you back with us?
I am.
Tremendous. We are set and ready to roll for our Media Bids Power Hour, an educational opportunity for those of you who are selling ads, whether you're selling them in print, in your e-newsletter, or a combination of also on your website. You are in the right spot, whether you sell ads into a magazine, a newspaper, or a specialty or niche publication, whether your CERC is free or paid or controlled. You are in the right spot, and we have lots to share with you. As we're getting settled in, you're always going to hear the same consistent words that try to make this really a priority for you. Close your office door. Make it as quiet as possible around you during the course of our educational teleseminar. It is not an accident that there is not something on the screen, which would create multitasking and many-tasking. All of the best adult educational research and all of our work, 22 years working with media leaders, shows that the more notes you make, the more notes you take, the more that you are going to hear and be able to deploy the things that we're talking about. And that's the most important part of all the work that we do every step of the way. During the course of our educational teleseminar, you can simply hit reply to the confirmation that we sent you in order to come to our educational program, or simply send an email to Ernest@powerhour.com, and we will work and weave your questions in. Jed, how about some opening words? Tell us what's cooking in and around Media Bids. It's been a pleasure working with you over the last 10-plus years. We have literally 100-plus hours of educational programs that we've hosted and held just like today. Always a pleasure. So how about some opening words? Tell us what's cooking in and around Media Bids.
All right. First of all, I want to thank Ernest. He does a great job of these teleseminars, and like a lot of these topics, this is one that I do not know much about. So I'm looking forward to learning along with the rest of you. My name is Jed Gould. I'm the president of Media Bids. We've been around for about 20 years, and we are we're devoted to generating revenue for publications, primarily for their print editions. We do a lot of both conventional and response-based ad placements. On any given week, we have about 10,000 ads that we run, and so we're constantly interacting with both advertisers and publications, which gives us a unique perspective on the industry. As far as what's going on at Media Bids, we continue to add new advertisers and publications, and the summer months are always a little funny, in that there tends to be sort of a drop in general energy level, I think, between publications and advertisers, and maybe us too. I'm not sure. I'd like to think not, but so we're compensating for that, hopefully with some advertising campaigns that are sort of summer oriented. If you're using Media Bids, thank you. We look forward to speaking to you in the near future. Feel free to give us a call. If you're not, would just like to find out more, please feel free to either call us or check out our website. We're always looking for more publication partners, however large or small they may be.
Perfect. And to each of you and all of you who work with Media Bids, you know the wonderful and sterling reputation they have and the results they drive. And for those of you who have not, take a look at MediaBids.com. Jed and their team do business in the old-fashioned way. They give you a promise. They deliver on that promise. They know what they're doing. And they'll always speak frankly and transparently with you about your publication, your ad results, the right fit with advertisers. And it's a beautiful combination. Plus, the ads that they tuck in for and with you help you sell more advertisers on the other side. It's a very, very, very synergistic relationship. My name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. I began in the advertising sales industry in 1986, launched three of my own publications, was a leader in a billion-dollar media group, launched Power Hour in 1995, and today we've now coached more than 2,500 ad sales leaders and their companies and their teams in 13 time zones around the world over the last 22 years. The bigger your challenges, the bigger your obstacles, the more we love working with you. Plus, our signature work is a sales academy. We meet every Tuesday, same time, same bat time, same bat channel, and we take a topic a week and work on it. Here's the difference. It's open mic. I can hear your voice, you can hear mine, and we work on that particular topic. So the things that we're covering here today, you're going to walk away with probably 20 or 25 strategies at a high level that you can deploy. A typical Sales Academy week, we take one or two of these and go a mile deep. We take the entire week and just focus on all the ins and outs of the particular strategy. So just come to powerhour.com and you'll see the work that we're doing. So, Jed, today we're going to be talking about an authoritative approach achieves additional ads. As I said earlier, each of those words begin with the letter A, which was some fancy wordsmithing, if you know what I mean.
That's fine that you were able to come up with a topic that's all A's this month, but I want to see you come up with a topic that's all B's next month.
Oh my gosh, help, that's not in my script today. You've stunted me. I can't go on with all the keys.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jen. That hurt, okay? Let's talk about what is an authoritative approach. The root word of authoritative is authority, right? To be a person of authority, to be respected, to be knowledgeable, okay? So this is elevating ad sales. We do plenty of tactical and strategic ways to sell ads. We know how to do that, but this is flying well above that, okay? This is where, you know, you sort of pause and say, how come my competitor is here, here, and there? How come their publisher, their sales director, Sally, everywhere I go I see Sally's name? How come every time I show up at an association event or a trade show, they're speaking on the panel, they're moderating, they're hosting, and they're sponsoring in the back of the room, okay? And it's not about money. I really want to clarify that, and Jed and I want to communicate that. It's about working smarter, okay? Not spending more, but working smarter and being aware of those opportunities. So the word that I like to sort of think about is chapped. I have sat in association meetings where 500 of my clients or prospective clients are all sitting in the same room. At the front of the room, the keynote presenter is my competitor. I can use the word chapped in a sentence. Very unhappy, very frustrated, not proud of myself that they're there and I'm sitting in the back of the room, okay? And my clients and my prospects, my advertisers, are eating out of their hand. My ad agencies are eating out of their hand. So that's the spirit of what this is. And it begins with, you know, how do we, you know, sort of make certain that we're on point in message? How does our media brand mirror that messaging, right? So what is the message? So often, Jed, when we begin working with ad sales teams and media sales groups, you know, we'll say to them, hey, listen, on the back of a business card, tell me, what is it you do really well? And some, in many cases, we get this long pause. You know, what is it you really do well? We are the authoritative source for RVs in Vancouver. Great. And we've done it for 26 years. Okay? I heard, Jed, you capsule what MediaBid does in a brief sentence, what you have done and what you do and deliver. And so it's important to begin with that as a starting point. But then we have to go, you know, we have to take it another step up, which says, but how do we position ourselves in our messaging as the go-to media source? The go-to. This goes back almost 30 years ago. I remember speaking of Vancouver, Jed, there was a publication called Buy Sell in Vancouver. And this thing was like, I don't know, 200 pages of classified ads. That's all it did, classified ads. They had more classified than any other media source up in Vancouver, and you bought it for like a quarter or something at the check stand. Very interesting model. It was called the buy-sell. And I remember, you know, people talked about it like it was like, oh, like the Bible to revere. You bow in front of the buy-sell, you know. I remember right. Some of the early days of Auto Trader, right? You know, they were the go-to source of all the ads. And there was a day and a period of time where they just completely dominated. I think about the real estate space. I think about Homes and Land and the Real Estate Book. Those two magazines, which are really the dominant player in the real estate magazine side, have been around combined almost 80 years. And today, by the way, they're owned by one company. So they're now one with two magazines under their title for Shelter. They have absolutely dominated the space. Now, when you take those quick examples for all of you, you pause and say, hey, I'm not that. I'm not the biggest in Canada, or I'm not the Auto Trader, or I'm not. That's fine. But who are you, and where are you the best? For example, if your space is the green space or the natural space, and you're in Vancouver, how do you carve that out and make certain that you are everywhere that your ideal readers are, that you are working with those advertisers, that you're at the various shows or events or activities? You only have to focus on being the dominant in your space and doing what you do. And by the way, Jed, in the work that you do with MediaBids, you are the source. You have accomplished that and work hard at it every single day. That's a fair statement, right?
Yeah, well, you know, we would like to think so, right? Yeah, I mean, we probably we're in a similar situation as a lot of individual pubs are, in that, you know, we've sort of picked an area where whether it's through attrition or just you know how it's worked out, you know, there isn't a lot of competition. It becomes, I think, maybe even harder to define yourself in the absence of competition, because the tendency is to want to overreach, right? To be not just, you know, to not just sort of be the best RV, just to make it up, to use your example, right, not to be the best RV magazine in Vancouver, but to be the best RV magazine in, you know, British Columbia and in Canada and the world, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay to be specific, as you're suggesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is. And in some cases, using the example of being, you know, the best RV magazine in, you know, Vancouver, you could say, listen, we're the best just, you know, north of Freeway 80 in Vancouver. This is all we do, is just the northern portion of Vancouver. So it's also okay in terms of how we call out. Is it by geography? Is it by partitioning the geography? Is it having more frequency or less frequency than your competitors, right? Is it having better editorial or no editorial at all? What are the pros and cons? You know, is it about free circ, paid circ? Is it about controlled? I mean, look, these are all the things that you've got a lot of keys on the keyboard to be your best and do your best, but you have to know what those keys are and what those decisions are. You have to ask yourself, are you a must-buy? So, you know, are you the must-buy in your space, okay? Are you the last ad source to be cut? Do media buyers and ad agencies come to you for advice because you're on the pulse? You know, gee, we've noticed that, you know, several of our competitors are all doing the following, Ernest. You know, what is your take on it, Jed? We see that many in the space are doing this and that with ad size or the placement of color or the placement of the ad, and you go, well, actually, you know, Jed, you would say, I have a lot to say about ad size or placement or black and white versus color, because these are the things that we watch and track and understand, including what the offerings are. So the point is that do you find advertisers coming to you? The greatest compliment, Jed, you've heard it here in some of our teleseminars, in my media corporate days, the greatest compliment, I didn't know it then, that they would come to me and say, look, I'm working on my budget. Can you come around 2 in the afternoon? I want you to help me craft how my budget should lay up by category, by line item for the next 12 months. Greatest compliment. Jed, I just thought they wanted me, you know, to share a little insight. I thought they were asking me to sort of work harder than I should have been. Actually, it's the greatest compliment. I should have just shut up, done it, and been, God, that was, like, pretty cool. And then I realized later on, it was not as common as I thought, but I always strived for that, to be inserted in that. You know, when we survey our ad, our ad buyers, our ad clients or prospects, another way to know if you're the authoritative source, you know, do they know the recent news that you've been sharing? Do they know about upgrades that you've made in your editorial, in your circ, in your website? Do they know about improvements that you're working on in terms of your search engine optimization, the growth of your e-newsletter readers, whatever it might be? Recognize that every step of the way, that as you're improving things, if you don't go out into the marketplace and declare it, then the marketplace doesn't know. It's that classic moment, Jed, when you say, gee, if a tree falls in the woods and no one hears it, did it fall? My response, it didn't fall. Meaning, you know, you could be shouting from the highest mountain that your circ is doubled, but if I go out and do a random survey of your advertisers, prospective advertisers or ad buyers, and they don't get it and they don't know that, it doesn't matter. And therefore, your ad revenue or your ad retention and renewals will not improve. Does that make sense, Jed?
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. I mean, I think that the biggest challenge that publications, you know, have is that one of the biggest challenges is that they're competing against media outlets who, in many cases, are not even playing the game, right? Like, you know, so it's not, you know, someone like Google, for example. You know, they're not saying to RV dealers in Vancouver, you should advertise with us. It's just that RV dealers in Vancouver just have this sort of impression that that's where they should be spending their money because that's where everyone else is spending their money. So it's a little bit like, you know, it's just this self-fulfilling prophecy, right? So it becomes sort of a twofold defining of yourself, right? You not only do you have to sort of define, and you sort of alluded to this, but you have to define yourself as the source, but you also have to make it clear why it's important to be the source. Like, you know, and I don't know the numbers, but maybe it, you know, maybe 50% of all RVs are purchased locally. You know, if you by sort of including that information, it makes, I think, your position more relevant.
Yeah, in fact, you just said something.
Sorry.
That No. Well,
I'm really
you have this
good
amazing
at
ability to read my
what?
Mind. But you have this amazing ability to spark my creative thinking, okay? like a turtle on the Galapagos. I must get to the other side of the island. So here's my point on this. What Jed just said is really important, and it's called let your advertisers fight for their placement in your media, okay? Jed just capsuled that, and frankly, Jed, I wasn't going to say anything about that. I hadn't tucked that in, but it is perfect to being the authoritative source, and that means that when you have, for example, if you're focused on RVs or you're focused on a publication just for attorneys or chiropractors or realtors, whatever it might be, to have realtors vying for, well, how come I'm not on page two? Well, that's because that's a premium page. Well, how come I'm not on the home page of your website? Because that's an exclusive page and there's only 7 advertisers. But I can put you on the waiting list and you can be number 8. And if somebody in the first 7 drops off, you roll up. By the way, there's actually 17 waiting for the spot on the website. Oh, by the way, not only is page 2 a premium, page 3, 4, and 5 are a premium. In fact, all the way out to page 10. So we have no additional opportunity to be able to work with you, okay? Okay, we have no opportunity, okay, to be able to work with you unless you want to get on the waiting list, and I'll put your number 15 on that page. Well, how do I get to page 2? Well, at this point, you start on page 15, and if anybody declines to continue forward, then you move to page 14, which then moves you to page 13. So all of a sudden, Jed, you hit it right on the head. The point is that by, you know, calling out and working with scarcity, working around timing, and let advertisers use your medium and your vehicles from an exclusivity perspective, it really heightens your authority when many of your other competitors, A, are not deploying that strategy, and B, are giving ads away, gifting ads, giving editorial, providing additional exposure, and you're out there pausing going, actually, no, these are the fees, these are the charges, these are the things that we do. That's what it means to be at the authoritative source, which is a whole nother teleseminar tied to competitors that are discounting are actually highly vulnerable because people know what each other pay. And on a future teleseminar and or the work we do on our Tuesday academies, we laugh in the face of competitors that are discounting because they're actually highly vulnerable. But we won't go down that path today. So, Jed, an excellent point right there. Let's weave in a couple of questions that sync up related to this. Ralph in Texas asks, what is the best way to lead into your sales pitch? Well, actually, Ralph, we're working on that right now. Our question for you, in fact, a media kit has 19 to our standard, has 19 key areas that it must have. So if you were to send your media kit over and we run it through our checklist of 19 key points of what has to be mandatory in your media kit, that's what we look for. So the first piece is, are you prepared to give your presentation, your only presentation, and does your media kit convey that? The second part of that is it including what we're talking about here? Meaning the information that is highly disruptive. If you do not disrupt the status quo, then any advertiser could say what? Oh, I do it myself. Oh, I got my own social media. Oh, I'm happy with my own ad campaigns. And they're going to blow you off. Ad agencies that won't take your calls or give you a meeting, prospects that won't give you an opportunity, because you have not defined that you are the authoritative source. Hence the reason our conversation here today. One more question, and that is Orin in Alabama asks, what is the best way to convince a potential advertiser that print is still effective? Which, Jed, if you wouldn't mind, I think you have a little something to say about that one. The floor
well,
is
yeah,
yours.
Yeah, I mean, so what we do here, I mean, I, you know, it's like this is like, yeah, I feel like I'm a little bit like a preacher or something. Like, you know, I have to sort of give this talk at every teleseminar in one way or another. But what you know, what we do here is we track phone numbers. So we're able to tell how every publication, you know, like I mentioned earlier, we're running about 10,000 ads a week. If we're running, you know, we're able to tell exactly how much response each advertiser is generating in each publication. So we can tell you, okay, we have a flower company. You know, they do well in, you know, in the Midwest. You know, Dish Network does well in, you know, in Ohio, but not in Pennsylvania. Or, you know, so we can sort of, you know, break it down and look and see how every publication is doing with every ad that's running. And what that does for us is that it gives us the ability to go to advertisers and to say. And again, I think this sort of, I'm using a slightly different slant only because I think it factors into maybe making us more authoritarian than we even realize we are. But we can go to advertisers and we can say, hey, if you run these ads, we think you're going to receive, you know, 500 phone calls next week. And out of those 500 phone calls, you should be able to make 250 to 300 sales, right? And when you start throwing around numbers like that, and when you start, and I don't mean like necessarily big numbers, but when you start throwing around numbers that that equate to sales, you know, that's sort of, for me, in my world, right, that's how I kind of define authoritarian. I think that Ernest, understandably, is giving it a broader definition of both, you know, just kind of, you know, overall knowledge of an industry, whereas I sort of, you know, for me, and what we deal with, it tends to be more about the actual response and the actual sales that are generated. And so the gentleman who asked about how do you get someone to take a meeting seriously? I mean, I think you get someone to take a meeting seriously the same way that we do and the same way that any other medium does. And that is that you talk about what you can do for them, right? You can say, if you were able to say to them, hey, you know, my readers are going to buy, you know, 25 RVs in the next, you know, in the next 90 days. You know, do you want an ad or not? You know, I mean, if you can say something like that and have, you know, and have sort of some data to back it up, I mean, that's how you get people to pay attention. And that's how you get people to say, you know, I didn't realize that that you were such a commanded that kind of potential buying power. So, you know, I mean, one thing, you know, last thing I'll say on this is that what you will find if you start to drill down on tracking and you start to drill down on who's responding to ads and how many people are responding to ads, let me just say really quickly, we do it with phone numbers. There's lots of ways to do it. You can do it with URLs. You can do it with text messages. You can do it, you know, you can try to do it in some offline ways. But however you try to do it, you should do it, you know, because it makes a huge difference. What we find as a result of doing all this tracking is that print closes better than any other medium. right? There's no debate about that. I mean, we have big campaigns going, you know, Dish Network, DirecTV, where they are selling 50 to 60% of the people who call are buying, right? Now, that is unbelievable. I mean, you're talking online, they're getting less than, you know, less than a percent of the people who respond are, you know, are actually buying. And so it really just comes down to a mathematical equation. It's like, okay, sure, you know, online you're paying, you know, $5 a click, but if you're only making, you know, one sale out of 100, that's a really expensive customer. As opposed to print, where, sure, you know, it kind of stinks that you're only going to get, you know, 10 phone calls from an ad, but out of those 10 phone calls, you're going to make more sales than you would have through, you know, thousands of clicks. So it's so that's how we're able to try to combat some of the, you know, some of the issues which are, you know, issues for everyone in how you sort of get around really cheap, really impressive sounding online advertising. Is try to break it down and to figure out how it works. Because I think once you start to look at how it works, you will find very, very quickly that it really doesn't work that well in terms of a sales perspective.
Mm-hmm. So we're hoping, Ralph, that's helpful for you and Oren as well. We have additional questions that will roll in, and we'll continue to be responsive to those both here in our educational seminar, and then, of course, as a follow-up, we'll follow up to affirm that we've answered your question. So let's move back into the second piece and the second part of the questions that we promised to cover here, and that is to talk about the focus. What is the focus? What are the steps to focus your authoritative voice in a way that your best advertisers and prospective advertisers take notice, and how will this approach shift your relationships with ad agencies and buyers? And by the way, the ad agencies are the toughest standards. If you can make it through that standard, then everything else is easy. For those of you that don't maybe work with agencies as much, then just think about either your largest advertisers that you're trying to secure or former or past advertisers who are the toughest, who spend the most with your competitors, okay? So, you know, we go down a variety of ways. So the first piece to recognize is, to what Jed was saying, there is no magic wand. You have to do a lot of things really good. You know, who is going to read this? How do you put it into their hands? How do they respond and engage? You got to connect all the dots, okay? And when we do, by the way, you've heard Jed talk about how powerful print is and how compelling those ad results are. So from the print side, you know, whenever an ad sales team or media group comes to us, we go start down the path of, you know, is your CIRC free? Is it paid? Is it controlled? And why? You know, what are the strengths? What are the advantages of each of those? And then, of course, we go right into how does that relate to your competitors? You know, how does that position you? We've got some of our clients that have made a shift or run a hybrid because of some of the coaching that we have provided for them related to this. We talked earlier about the geographical coverage, right? In print, where do you cover it? There are sometimes advantages because competitors are covering a smaller area. You cover a larger area, and you bring in a larger volume of leads. In reverse, sometimes less is more. We tighten up the geographical visibility to give you even more of the authoritative. So, for example, using Park City, we live in a ski resort, you could say we are just the print publication that just goes to those in the downtown area, population 6,000 people. Now, the Park Record is the city newspaper. Since the 1800s, they cover the entire county. They cover 30,000 exposure. So they have higher costs to do that, where you could sit right in the downtown area, or you could scamper 15 minutes out to the county seat and say, we just cover Colville. If you were to look at the Park Record and their coverage of Colville, there's generally two stories of 70 or 80 pages. These are those examples of, do you cover more or do you cover less, and how does that relate to your thought leadership, that you can just literally own Colville, albeit a smaller market, but everybody knows you in Colville, and you're the go-to source. And when the Park Record comes out to say, do we like to sell you an ad, the response from the advertiser is, why would I buy an ad with you? I can be with Ernest, where every single page is about Colville, and I know, because Ernest told me so, there's only two stories of your 80 pages about Colville. And I've seen it. So you're not my go-to source. You see how we focus on really positioning from that perspective. For some of you, it's editorial, and others, it's the lack of editorial, right? We have print publications that, like the Homes and Land or the Auto Trader, that were intended to be nothing but ad platforms. That's it. No ad, no fluff, no editorial, and that can be part of your authoritative voice. In some cases, though, we've added some editorial. This is part of the work that we've helped our clients do. We've added editorial, or in other cases, we've improved and ratcheted up editorial. So it's, is there an editorial component, and then how does that compare with your competitors as well? And then back to what what Jed said is the ad return on investment, the ad ROI, the compelling story, no doubt. Your authoritative voice can sometimes come from the pipe that there's nobody driving more RV leads in Colville better than us. We know exactly what we're doing. Or in this section of Vancouver, if that may be. So what is your authoritative voice? But you have to know, back to Jed's point, you have to know how many calls are coming in because you're able to, what, track that. You have to know how many of those calls are converting to what? People coming to the RV dealers, how many people come to there and actually drive an RV, how long before they buy that RV, right? And then what is the justification and the ROI they've actually made a purchase? These are those things about what? You create your authoritative voice. Now, we're using RVs, and we're talking about Auto Trader, and we're talking about Homes for Sale magazines. You have to now extract out and think about strategically what it is you do and who you serve and how you maintain that voice from that perspective on the print side. Let's move over to the e-newsletter side. The e-newsletter, we scamper down a whole nother path. For example, there may be those who you compete with in your marketplace who only put out a newsletter once a month. You make the shift from an authoritative perspective and you say, we're weekly. Or you've been monthly and everybody else is weekly. You don't really have a choice. You have to match their weekly frequency, okay, so that at the very least you're on par. The very least you're on par. So it's like playing poker. If Jed, you have a pair of kings and I have a pair of queens, we're on par. If Jed has three aces and I have a pair of queens, I got a problem. Okay, he has one up me. All right? So when you think about your newsletter, the frequency, how about the content? How about the ad results? We come right back now again talking about what Jed was sharing. But how about the readership growth? How about the readership growth that your e-newsletter grew by 2,000? Now, is that a lot? Well, if it was 2,000 last year and it grew by 2,000, that's a what? 100%. You doubled your CIRC. So where's the visual tool that you bring out to advertisers and ad agencies so they can see and they're aware of the impact you've made? And that's the point about staying on message. So often we go out and work on our CIRC over here. We improve our editorial there. We come over here and tweak our website. But our advertisers don't know it. So, you know, part of being an authoritative voice is on one side, what are you doing that is authoritative to position you above the rest of your competitors? And then, of course, the other side of it is how do you communicate it consistently in your branding, consistently when you're in a presentation, consistently when you show up at a trade show or an association event, consistently when I'm working across your website and your newsletters and in print. Those are the things that sync up. The last part, because we're talking about your mediums, is also about your website. Talk about, let's talk for a moment, Jed, about site visits, for example. You know, what does that tell us about who's coming into our site, how long they're on the site, how many pages are on the site, what is the page growth of views and visibility and readership? How about those who are contributing to our forum? All of these things show engagement, and we can come back and share that with our advertisers. And ultimately, back to where Jed spoke about 15 minutes ago, it also has to do what? Generate results. And we have that piece of that story as well woven in here. So everything we're talking about, there's tactical things to drive these strategies forward, but then what we're talking about today is at the highest level, how do we bundle all that up and put that into the story that says we are the authority in RVs sold in the northern portion of Vancouver, if that's what it is we're known for. Jed, your observations on that?
You know, I think that, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, as you were talking, I was thinking of just, you know, how much it varies with different types of advertisers, right? And I guess, mm-hmm. I guess one of the magic of sales is figuring out what's important to the person you're talking to at that moment, mm-hmm. and you know, and so there's certainly advertisers out there that are, you know, that want to hear more about your publication, want to hear about your circulation and about your editorial changes and all that you know, all the stuff that Ernest mentioned. You know, I tend to deal with a lot of advertisers that just don't care about. I mean, what they care about is you know, will spending this money result in us making more money than we spent? You know, I don't have. I'm sure that that's an aberration, right? That's not indicative of all advertisers out there. But I do have a sense that talking about your audience and talking about your readership and and the buying power of your readership is maybe it's maybe not more important, but it's certainly as important as any of the other aspects in today's world, right? Like, you know, if we've learned anything from sort of the last 10 years of internet advertising growth, it's that many advertisers have absolutely no idea where they're advertising, right? All they care about is look at that. I got clicks out of it. You know, I spent $100 and I got 100 clicks. You know, I'm happy, right? I mean, and so what I think your challenge is as you know, print people today is to educate your advertisers on what exactly it is they're buying and why it is that you can deliver what they really want, which I think is ultimately, you know, sales.
Mm-hmm. And here's the piece. Jed, I am in complete agreement with you. There are some presentations that begin with bottom line, what will you do for me? That you start through the back door, and you have to be able to respond to that. And as you hear me talking about ad results, ad ROI, number of calls, number of tours, number of visits, all those pieces are absolutely. For those who just want to buy with a calculator, beautiful. We have to be prepared for that. And they may say, is there anything else? Nope. Great. Press our 3 copies. We're done. That presentation's over. Sometimes they start with numbers, and they maybe do want to know a little bit about the other component. We have to be prepared for that. We have other buyers,
right?
We have other buyers that want to talk about the professional association. They know that you chair one of the committees, or they know that you're on the new membership committee. There are others that know that you are involved with the current issues. We want to be current on that. There are others that want to talk about circulation or readership or buying power. So, you know, the point is I'm completely in agreement. We have to be prepared for a buyer who comes to the back door, when it comes to the front door, or when it comes to the windows, no matter where they want to be served or no matter what their hot buttons are, we got to serve them, right?
Right.
Make sense? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so
yeah,
completely in agreement. And Jed is sharing with you the most hard-nosed calculator route buyers, and I love that. And make no mistake, as you're listening to me talking about media kits and 19 points and, you know, your readership, those may be the softer side, but there are plenty that buy on that side too, and we have to be prepared for that side. No matter where, from the softest to the hardest and everything in between in terms of the buying styles, it's our job to adapt to that buyer, period. Period. Okay? So, Jed, excellent points related to that. Speaking of, let's talk about associations. Let's continue down this path of authoritative voice, your voice staying on point, staying on message. Your associations, we opened up talking about being chapped, being at association events. Your associations are way more than a show up and have lunch, and we want you to treat it like that. So opportunities to speak, opportunities to co-present, opportunities to be on a panel, all of those are amazing opportunities. There's a whole wide variety of strategies of how you get to the front of the room instead of your competitors and to ensure that you have that audience. Remember, too, that associations do a wonderful job of what? Bringing members in, putting on events, and filling seats. All you have to do is what? Stand in the front, and the seats are filled. It's really a beautiful thing. It's really a beautiful concept. So leverage that. There are also opportunities to write articles about media, advertising, marketing in their magazines, their newsletters, their blogs, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to showcase your visibility on that side. Once again, to show that you are the go-to source in the sector. There's an opportunity to do what? Share key events, sponsorships. Here's one of our signature pieces. How many of you have approached an association you're part of, an upcoming trade show, and offer to do their program. Why? Because you're going to sell ads into that program. And in some cases, revenue share with the association. And in some cases, our clients, over many, many years of utilizing this strategy, not only take on the program, not only revenue share, but remove and exclude or have the association exclude competitors from participating in shows. It is a power play. By the way, using the word chapped, if you've been on the other side and wonder why you don't get access to specific shows because a competitor outran you, they gained the upper hand, okay? This eat or be eaten from that strategy, okay? Quick little story, Jen, in my early days around media and advertising, I was in San Diego, and I learned that the Chamber of Commerce was sending out a lot of information that people would require. Now, this is in the day, but there's many other examples of today. But in those days, everything would go out into the chamber package, and they spent a lot of money on postage. And they had all kinds of stuff, the realtor stuff and stuff about, you know, where you can find rentals and, touristy fun kinds of things. So basically, it was kind of a packet about San Diego. It cost them, I don't know, $2, $3, $4 or something to send it out. And I was like, wow, how interesting. I said, I noticed that you put my magazine in. I also noticed you put my competitor. Gee, would you be open if I were to pay for your postage? Would you just include me? Will you remove them? Sure. Postage runs, $600,000, $800,000 a month. You'll cover that? Yep, sure, I will. And that was one of those moments that not only did I gain the upper hand, but then from an authoritative perspective, I could go out to all my advertisers to say that my magazine was the only one that went out with the Chamber of Commerce. Now, that was a past example. Those kinds of examples still exist today. You have to be creative. You have to think out of the box. You have to think smart match alliances, many of the things we talk about during our Tuesday Academy, but those are the kinds of things you are looking for. Lastly, on this point, extras. And Jed, you actually touched on some of these extras as you were kind of rolling along. Industry sector white papers can be really very compelling, and it raises you above the marketplace, but it also lets you pull in feedback and white papers from your largest advertisers and your largest prospects. You go out sort of like Switzerland to be able to pull in that data on topical areas related to white papers, educational webinars or teleseminars like we're doing, showcases your authoritative voice, industry surveys, leaning in on hot issues, hot political issues, hot economic issues, changes in insurance, changes in governmental decisions. There are so many things that happen in a variety of sectors. Take, for example, the RV sector. If they were going to change governmentally the way that RVs were classified from an insurance perspective, and that was a really big deal. It was going to deter RV sales. I'd love to be running point on that, or at the very least have a seat at the table with all the biggest and largest RV dealers so that I could let them know I cared, let them know I had a voice, let them know I would help with my time, my thoughts, and even on the financial side is a huge way to really elevate your authoritative approach from that perspective. Sometimes it's also fundraising. For example, there are organizations that go out and say, look, we really need additional funds or we need additional members. We have one of our clients right now in the Midwest, Jed, that they really need to gain more members. My client, no surprise, leaned in and said, we'll chair it. In fact, we've got a number of ideas and strategies. In fact, we'll put three of our people on it just from hello, and we'll even tell you who the other six, seven, or eight are that we think should be on the group to go out and gain new members, none of which were what? Their competitor. Right. Wink, wink, Jed, you know how we roll. We sort of filled the fundraising, and in this case, the new membership committee, with all of our recommendations and excluded the competitors. Sometimes readership surveys, industry buying power, Jed, that you had talked about. The piece about tracking, so key. There's such a leadership component. And there's another component, Jed, around the whole tracking piece. And you know the term, and I know it. We often refer to it as leakage, right? If I place an ad in a magazine and there's a toll-free number, we can track that. But if there's also an address, I can go right to that yogurt store, right? It's just an element of leakage. If there's a website for that, Asian restaurant, I can also just go to the website, and on the website, if there's not the same tracking number, there's an element of what? Leakage. So, Jed, if on the tracking side, you know, the phone calls, you know, we can know that there was 100 phone calls that came in on the tracking side. There still was a physical address for that yogurt store, or there was a URL for that Asian restaurant, whatever it might be. And then there's an element of leakage. And then you have the other piece called referral. So, Jed, maybe I saw the ad. Maybe I went to the website, so you can't quite track that. Maybe I had this great meal at this Asian restaurant. I tell you about it at breakfast, and you go tomorrow night. You know, there's this, these elements of leakage that are an important part that when we're giving our presentation, when we're talking to agencies, when we're talking to advertisers and buyers, that there's additional ricochet and ripple effect to the ad campaigns that are out there. And honestly, it can't all be tracked unless you do some signature things. For example, the URL is, well, if you actually remove the URL and remove the address, then you just have a phone number. Or in some publications, Jed, like we see, like Wired Magazine will run an ad for Apple, and it says, for this special offer, go to wiredmagazine.com/Apple. So they've set up a special landing page for it. You know, look, everyone is trying to get the most finite ways of measuring and to eliminate this leakage piece, but Jed, the leakage piece is still out there in some capacity. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And so, you know, I think that, you know, most advertisers, especially if you talk to them before the process begins, will be pretty honest about it. You know, they'll say, you know, out of every, you know, for every 10 phone calls we get here with people asking us about our product or service, we get two or three leads on the website, and we get two or three people that come in through the door. So it's all kind of an estimate, right? It's all, you're sort of building these hypothetical algorithms that really probably always need to be adjusted. You know, you might talk to one advertiser, and you might call them up and say, hey, I noticed you got 10 phone calls from your last ad. That's great, right? You know, it's because that also means you got two or three people who came in the front door, and you got another two or three people that went to your website, and the guy says, you know, we got the phone calls, but we didn't get anyone in the front door, and we haven't had any visitors on the website, in which case, you know, your algorithm's a little bit wrong. You know, like, for whatever reason, it didn't work out the same way for that guy as it did for others. And we see that all the time. I mean, we have some advertisers that do very, very well with website sales, others that don't do well at all with website sales, you know, and in what's surprising to us recently, this is a little bit off the subject, but what's surprising to us recently is that seniors appear to be more and more focused on web advertising. So, or not web advertising, but on responding to print ads by using a URL. So some of our strongest web response ad campaigns are ones that are focused on seniors, which I would have thought the exact opposite, right? I would have thought that anyone over about the age of, I don't know, 65, right, would feel more comfortable picking up the phone. But in fact, it doesn't appear to be the case. But anyway, you can sort of come up with these hypothetical scenarios and run them by your advertiser, and then use that scenario, as long as you are able to track one piece of it, right, track the phone calls, it should give you a pretty good idea how the other areas are doing as well. You know, I've just found that the key is to get that information up front, because once it's started, then basically any information that's given from that point on is essentially a negotiation about price, right? So as long as you can understand the dynamics of a business going into it, it gives you a much better chance of getting to the truth. The big, huge one, which you didn't mention, Ernest, but this for us, and I think for most people on the call, is the biggest thing to find out is, look, how many people on average do you need to talk to before you sell something?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We would call that a close rate. What's the rate of closing a sale? You know, so for an RV, it's going to be pretty low, right? It might be 10%. You know, that's probably even too high. So the higher ticket an item is, the lower the close rate, traditionally speaking. You know, if you're selling 1999 flowers, well, you know, you can have a close rate that's 75%, because for the most part, the price is not a barrier. So it's if you can find out that rate, like find out what they're currently doing, you know, what that allows you to do is to sort of extrapolate off of all this other information to be able to come up with numbers like, you know, in the case of RV sales, if you generate 20 phone calls and the guy tells you that he's closing at 10%, well, you know, then he just sold, you know, $150,000 worth of RVs as a result of your ad, right? I mean, it's sort of as simple as that. I don't know how much RVs cost. I'm assuming $75,000 each. I could be low or high on that. So I mean, you know, you're basically just going off that. The one component you didn't mention, Ernest, which is an important mm-hmm. one when it comes
yep.
to print, is something that we call drag, which is mm-hmm. Which is that print has a ludicrously long drag period, so that after an ad runs, it'll continue to get phone calls for a period
mm-hmm.
of months and months and months. And so
mm-hmm.
generally speaking, you know, as a general rule, what we see is that the results that are generated from one ad that runs once, the results that are generated from that ad will pretty much, they'll tail off after about 10 days. The majority of the response usually does not come the day that the ad runs. The majority of response usually comes the day after. And then what you'll
mm-hmm.
see is that in the following month, it'll be about 10% of what it was during the month that it ran. So it'll continue to generate response, you know, usually for 2 or 3 months afterwards. And that's important to keep in mind, because a lot of times when people are first looking at the results of a print ad, it's unfair to look at it too soon. Because if you look at it too soon, you're really not getting all of the results that you're not taking into account all of the results that will eventually come. And it's part of just sort of the nature of print, right? Whether it's people ripping the ad out and putting it aside, or people looking at the publication later, all those things are probably true. But what we say, and I think it's accurate, is that people are calling when they have time, right? They're calling when they really have some time to investigate the product, as opposed to TV and radio. In terms of phone calls, TV and radio, and then in terms of responding to a web ad, people oftentimes are not responding when they have time. They're just responding because they're interested, and they think that they'll find something out and then respond again later. Right? Maybe if they're interested, they'll respond again later. But they're not sort of, you know, they don't have that that piece of information that a print ad offers, which allows them to physically hold on to it and to put it aside and to then make a phone call when they're most likely to be able to buy. And I think that's why print has higher close rates, is because people are responding when they are most able to buy.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a good point. And when you said the word drag, I thought shelf life, right? You know, the shelf life of print.
Right.
I mean, that's what you're referring to on that.
Like a weekly publication, it goes beyond shelf life, though, because It's not just a matter of like a weekly publication that comes out on a Tuesday getting a bunch of calls on a Friday or even the following Monday. I mean, I'm talking, you know, a month later, it'll still get 10% of the calls that it got during that first week.
Got it. Got it. Yep. Yep. Excellent point. And then to your point about the RV example, to go even deeper on that, perfectly valid to know, for example, what is the average sales price of an RV? What is it new versus used? How far are people willing to go to shop an RV? Like if I drive one, if I come to your deal and I drive one, will I drive an hour, 30 minutes? Will I drive 5 hours, right? We hear of those in Canada that drive to Arizona in some cases because prices are so good. So how far, you know, how competitive? Then we talk, then we think about, you know, once someone comes to your dealer, how many will they drive? How long before once they've made the first visit to when they've actually made the purchase? Will they actually, what is the lag time in terms of that? What is the time between a purchase and the next purchase, right? I mean, these, so Jed, to your point, again, kind of rattling my cage, these are the kinds of things we could talk about. Realtors the same way, chiropractors, attorneys, and paint stores or yogurt stores. It doesn't matter. Every single advertiser we have that we sell has the same pitter-patter of what makes their business work and what is most profitable. For example, is an RV dealer more excited about selling new RVs or used? And what does that mean in terms of the profitability? You might hear the words, well, the used, we make less profit, but we pick up what? For service on the other side. We pick up more service,
right.
And that's actually more profitable. So actually, we'd rather sell more of the used than the new. Great. Then that we should know that in terms of our ad campaign. Okay. And then you have the other component, which is another one of those invisible leakage moments, because then, Jed, I just bought the most amazing RV. You and I are sitting over lunch. You say to me, Ernest, I've always wanted an RV. You're not going to see an ad. That referral came from me. You know I bought an RV. I brought you to the house to see it. And now you just go to my friend Charlie and you buy an RV. No ad seen, no ad tracked. Another one of those leakage components. Before we get to the top of the hour, there's one other area that we want to talk about, and that is your competitive stack. How do you stack all this up? How do you use this approach to drive more ad sales? And it comes right from the things that we talked about, your company story, your editorial or ad options, like we talked about print, newsletter, and web. I don't want to skip over the importance of your team and the tenure of team, and maybe we'll cover that in an upcoming teleseminar because tenure has played such a big role. We've touched on your distribution circ. We've certainly talked about the return on investment and the ad results every step of the way, and it's a reminder that everything you do sets yourself apart. You are the brand. Your media and mediums are the brand. And you have got to position yourself as the authoritative source. Otherwise, you are just an ad salesperson like everybody else. Quick example on that. Had a client was working with this morning. She went out on a meeting. Was introduced to somebody over lunch. They're sitting over lunch. And he says he has a building that houses seniors. And in the middle of the meeting, she asks him, well, gee, tell me about your occupancy, to which he responds, yes, we're about 82% and things are going wonderful. She leaned in and said, how could that be? What expenses have you cut? The industry standard is 96%. To which he got stone silent and he said, how did you know that? I thought you were just an ad salesperson. She said, no, I've been in the sector for a long time. You cannot sustain that building at 82%, which is why we should be talking about your advertising. It's one of those reminders that he thought he was on a meeting with an ad sales rep, and the ad sales rep knew as much or more about his biz and could call him out, shift the meeting, and move it back to what we do best, selling ads, driving revenue, and generating results. So, Jed, as we're coming up here to the top of the hour, always a pleasure working together with you and all of the media sales professionals that come and join our teleseminars over all of the years. We hope the tools and the strategies and the information that we've shared are resources that you can use going forward. As you've been listening to Jed talk about the work that he does in and around media bids, please go take a look at their site if you're not currently working with them. And if you are, of course, you know the wonderful work that they do. Jed, how about some closing words before we wrap up here?
All right, sure. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining us. And thank you, Ernest. We always learn a lot from these teleseminars that Ernest leads. So check out his weekly seminars as well. But thanks, everyone, for joining us. And if you want more information from either Ernest or I, we'll send out an email, and please feel free to respond to it.
Beautiful. Thank you, everyone. Make it a great day. And, Jed, always a pleasure working you together. Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ernest. Bye. Thank you.